We'll be starting in just a moment. There we go. That's the key that we needed. So hello, everybody. Welcome to the VINA Groundwater Sustainability Agency adjourned regular board meeting of August 23rd, 2023. Just the quick public participation thing. Public comment will be accepted in person at the meeting or may be submitted by email at vinagsapublic.comments@chicoca.gov. If you would like to address the board at this meeting, you are requested to complete a speaker card and hand it to the board clerk prior to the conclusion of the staff presentation of the item. But we also look and make sure if nobody's raised their hand too. So we will do item 1.1. We are going to add a quick item of 1.3 just to repeat the closed session announcement, but we'll go with 1.1 for the roll call as soon as Linda Herman has made sure that our dais is all mic'd up.
Okay. Board Member Reynolds?
Here.
Board Member Kimmelshue?
Here.
Board Member Cooper?
Here.
Vice Chair Royer?
Here.
Chair Stasinski?
Here. And so the item 1.3, the closed session announcement, we held a closed session at 4 p.m. Ahead of this open session. The closed session was announced after the regular meeting agenda was released, which is why I've added this little item here. No action was taken and direction was given to council. And with that, we will move to item 2, the consent agenda. Item 2.1, approval of minutes for 510, 518, 724, 726, and 84 VINA GSA board meetings. are there any corrections or comments from board members about this? Any public comment?
No.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion.
Move to approve.
Second.
Great. Director Reynolds and Vice Chair Royer, whenever you're ready, Linda.
At second, was Royer?
It was, okay. Yeah, Vice Chair Royer.
Sorry, thank you. Board Member Reynolds?
Aye.
Board Member Kimmelshue?
Aye.
Board Member Cooper?
Aye.
Vice Chair Royer?
Aye.
Chair Stasinski?
Aye. That passes unanimously. We removed no items from consent, so we'll move to public comments. Members of the public may address the board at this time on any matter not already listed on the agenda. Comments are limited to 3 minutes. The board cannot take any action at this meeting on requests made under this section of the agenda. Do we have any public comments?
Does not like we have any.
Seeing none, I just wanted to give ample time for the last minute raising of the hand. We will move on. We have no notice public hearings, so we'll move to item 6, the regular agenda. Item 6.1, approval of an amendment to the cooperative agreement with the Rock Creek Reclamation District. Cammie.
All right. Thank you, Chair Tuchinski, Cammie Loser, Director of Water and Resource Conservation for Butte County, representing the GSA here tonight. And we are talking about the amendment to the cooperation agreement between Rock Creek Reclamation District and the GSA and the VINA GSA. And let me roll something up on my screen because it's bugging me. So this is the first amendment to our agreement that was signed between the GSA and Rock Creek GSA back in November of 2020. And in this GSA, it's pretty much discussing how we're going to share some of the costs for GSP implementation and SGMA compliance. And so in this this agreement, this amendment, it talks about what Rock Creek will be contributing to in associated with the budget that was just adopted for the fee study. And so specifically the agreement talks about the Rock Creek GSA contributing to annual reports, any GSP amendments and updates, the GSP program manager costs and public outreach. And I say GSP program manager, specifically that's more Christina is the GSP program manager. So there are things that are associated with GSP implementation. And then consultant and professional services costs associated with the above items and then other SGMA compliance activities. And then they would have their proportional costs would be based on acreage. So VINA GSA encompasses about 97.56% of the VINA subbasin and Rock Creek at 2.44%. So I think, so the recommended action would be to approve the cooperation agreement and authorize the chair to sign. And I would welcome any questions.
Great. Any questions from the board? Seeing none, do we have any public comments on this? Okay. Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion or discussion.
Move to approve.
Great.
Second.
We'll repeat. That's right. So Director Reynolds and Vice Chair Royer, roll call when you're ready, Linda.
Board Member Reynolds.
Aye.
Board Member Kimmelshue?
Aye.
Board Member Cooper?
Aye.
Vice Chair Royer?
Aye.
Chair Tuczynski?
Aye. That passes unanimously. Item 6.2, consideration of options to conduct a new fee study for future long-term funding for the VINA GSA. Cami Loser again.
All right. Thank you, Chair Tuczynski. So as you recall, back on July 26th, the VINA GSA approved a uniform fee for the GSA operations, GSP implementation, and SGMA compliance activities. The approved maximum amount was $3.09 per acre per year. However, with a charge of $1.54 for the 23-24 fiscal year, which will appear on the property tax bill for those landowners within the VINA GSA boundaries. As part of that approval, the VINA GSA board indicated that the approval of the $1.54 fee would be followed by the preparation of a new and more robust fee study and Proposition 218 process, focusing on alternative fee options, addressing the different groundwater user classes within the VINA subbasin. So member agency staff proposes to initiate the request for proposal process for a new fee study for the VINA GSA that would include, but is not limited to, the following tasks. I did kind of summarize all of the tasks in the transmittal, which there's many tasks that are similar to what we have, what we did in the last RFP, obviously taking us through a Prop 218 process, if that's the route that we go. But some of the key items that are in addition to the what we did last time is review of this current, a consultant would review the current adopted fee study, meeting summaries and recordings with a focus on some of the fee option alternatives that were perhaps discussed as part of the original process, but then also look at what has been done perhaps in other areas of the state that might be similar to the VINA subbasin. And then look, have a summary of fees that were adopted in other subbasins, perhaps a detailed comparison matrix that includes analysis of land uses and users with reduced costs and or exemptions and whether that even applies. We would also have probably a more extensive, and this isn't listed on this slide, but a more extensive legal review of those different options so that the board would know some of the legal implications of some of those fees that are adopted in other subbasins. And you know, at this point, we'll know if there's lawsuits for against some of those as well. So hopefully we can learn from other subbasins. And then an evaluation of alternatives with additional costs and implementation needs. As you recall, some of the issues that we, or challenges of some of the other alternative fee options was the additional data and information that might be needed to implement some of those fee options. And so this would have a more detailed cost estimate associated with that additional work. So we would have a budget, a proposed budget, and utilizing what we've already done, and then really look at the additional costs of some of those, any alternative fee options that we would be looking at. And then also an expanded public outreach program, including even multilingual materials. The Department of Water Resources, through their facilitation support services, has that as an option for us. And then included in the public outreach, we would have a more extensive public outreach plan that would probably have more mailings to stakeholders, some additional meetings, maybe smaller group meetings to identify options and desires of various stakeholders, and just, again, a more robust fee study without some of the time constraints that we experienced for this last Prop 218 process. So, and then, of course, in your transmittal, there are just all the other tasks that would be included as part of that process. The proposed schedule is, I keep thinking it's already September, and I look at that date and I'm thinking, what was I thinking? September's passed. But hopefully in the next couple of weeks, just being able to issue the request for proposal and have questions due back from consultants by September 22nd, issue any addendum if necessary, and then have proposals due around October 9th. We'll conduct the review, staff can conduct the review, rank the proposals, we'll do interviews if necessary, and then have a selection somewhere in the middle of October, and followed by contract negotiation and finalization the week of October 23rd, with approval by the Vina GSA board in November, the November 8th meeting. The previous contract was held by Butte County, so we're proposing that this contract be run through the GSA, because eventually we will have a program manager, and so that is a perfect thing for a program manager to manage for the GSA, but just continuing the process using staff. So with those activities in mind, the recommended action is to provide any comments and direction to staff.
Thank you, Cammy. Are there any questions of Cammy from?
Well, I believe I'm the one that made the motion to approve the fee. But within that motion, I asked that we put together, consider a new fee program for the following year, go through another 218 election. Doesn't look like you need any action up today other than suggestions, is that correct?
Yes, I will just move forward with it since it was part of your previous motion. I just wanted to make sure that if there was anything else that you really wanted to see in the RFP that perhaps I didn't cover, that we could add that to the RFP, any specific tasks, knowing what some of the things that
I think the only thing in the RFP I would ask is, and I don't know if this is appropriate or not, but consult with and investigate what other GSAs have done that have non-irrigated and irrigated lands, and even consult possibly with the California Cattlemen's Association. I don't know if that's appropriate to have in an RFP or not, but I think we need to talk to investigate what other GSAs are doing. And then if there was a mistake that we made, we did not consult enough non-irrigators. And I think that's something we need to do this time around. And then we had discussed also possibly putting together an ad hoc committee of some sort, would include irrigators and non-irrigators to discuss a more equitable and fair fee schedule. So I don't know if we talk about how we want to make up that ad hoc committee now, or is that something we do into the future?
I would leave that up to this board. It is something that we could look into for the future, as we get a consultant settled and appointments, because this board, as you know, will have some new appointments or reappointments, hopefully, to this board, and we can set up an ad hoc at that time, and then work with the SHAC to be able to identify how ways that we might want to do
so
that.
It may not be appropriate right now to talk about the makeup of that ad hoc committee.
Right.
Is that correct? Until we possibly, you know, we could have two new individuals on this board, and hope, like you said, probably not, but you never know.
Right.
And the only other thing I would ask is that if we have somebody on board, a consultant on board, excuse me, we have a consultant on board by November 8th. Is that going to give us adequate time to come up and do all the work we need to?
Hopefully, again, it is a tight timeline, we're faced with the same August 10th deadline. But remember that some of the activities have already been done. We would just be, for instance, it might be an update to the assessor's role. It depends on what type of fee option or multi-user class option might be applied, if that. So I think some things have already been done. It's just, so we have a good foundation and we would just build on that and refine it. But it would be, again, a tight timeline.
Okay.
2 months less tight, in other words, because we'll be starting, you know, they start in November at least. So
okay, that's good. And obviously, these consulting firms would have done this previously.
Right.
So this is something they would have some knowledge of. But I do believe in not reinventing the wheel if we don't have to, if we can look at what other successful GSAs have done up and down the state.
Yeah, I anticipate having a really robust matrix of comparisons to be able to look at and see what's applicable and not and even rank them as they are applicable to the FINA GSA. And then to your point, really having a stakeholder list, pulling from the GSP, which has a stakeholder list, and then refining that to specific groups here locally that we reach out to conduct some outreach to.
Okay, good.
And so again, we'll take public comment first. I get a sense of what direction we'll want to give, but just in case public comment, it sounds like there's something specifically that we'll all agree to bake into the plan, if you will, but let's just hear from any public before we start issuing more firm direction. Is there any public comment? Well, that was a rhetorical pause. I agree with you, Director Kimmelshue, and I think, again, if we spell out in the RFP that an ad hoc committee is going to be a part of the process, then I think we'll make sure that we get somebody who will work well with a group like that. I'm not faulting the current folks for it because that wasn't part of their structure, but if we give that in there and say that that's important to us, I think that's going to help. I think also it would be helpful. We probably could do the research on ourselves, but if we're able to get a sample of, or two of plans that they've done, so we can see if they do, probably two would be better, just so we can see if they do boilerplate plans or if we actually see substantive differences, that might be very helpful to include in an RFP. So if...
Absolutely.
And that's common to provide examples as well, so...
And lastly, I remember I was Vice Chair Royer and I were part of the county group that interviewed the finalists. We had three very robust finalists. I like the word robust. I believe I pulled that from you. And so again, I would hope that we would be able to engage the folks that we interviewed before and were impressed with and at least are somewhat familiar with us. There was one that had a local connection, and then there was another one that was an independent person who got contractors. So there was an interesting mix of models that we had. So anyway, I think that would be good. Is there any other?
What do you guys envision the difference being of an ad hoc versus our advisory committee?
Well, if you want my opinion, I would say we take some of each. Take some off of our SHAC, our committee, our advisory committee, and then possibly some from the community as well, and make an additional ad hoc committee in that regard. Just my opinion. So
I would think too, and also because our SHAC often reviews the things that we do. In fact, I can't think of anything substantive that we've done that they haven't at least gotten a look at some point in the process. I don't believe that this would preclude the SHAC from looking at this during one of their meetings and giving their input. So it's another set of input that we could have. So that's my thought anyway.
Yeah, and for those that are listening or in the audience that don't know, we use these acronyms, okay? SHAC stands for Stakeholder Advisory Committee, okay? And under our charter, we have a Stakeholder Advisory Committee, which is made up of, what, 10 people? From all different, from agricultural, environmental, who else is
domestic in, well owners.
Domestic well yeah. users.
And then
we have business.
Chico State, Butte College, okay. Cal Water.
Okay, so just so you know, that's when we talk about, when we refer to the shack, it's not some little dwelling somewhere, okay? it's the Stakeholder Advisory Committee. And then they report out to this 5-member board. So my inclination is to take some people from the shack who are willing to serve on an additional ad hoc committee. Plus, of course, I'm thinking of non-irrigators, which I don't think we had enough representation on our shack. Non-irrigators, meaning cattlemen, rangeland folks, or even, you know, people that have dry land farming. Not much in this area, but those are the kind of people that we would like to have on that ad hoc committee as well.
And it's possibly that one or more of our board members, up to two, might decide that they want to play a part, an active part in that as yeah. well. So, yeah, so I'll
very good point. Board, yeah. A couple board members would be good too.
Yeah. So anyway, I think we've given you a kind of general direction. And again, oh, I'm sorry, who's raising their hand? Oh, Valerie, I'm sorry. I don't have the hands up thing here. Please.
Can she speak?
If you can't speak yet,
hold
we're trying
on,
to
Valerie
unmute you.
Will give you some control.
Co-host. Valerie's our attorney, and I'm sure she's going to say that I said something wrong. So we'll see what happens.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to clarify that an ad hoc is also, you know, usually appointed for a specific purpose. Our stakeholder advisory is kind of a standing committee. It's Brown Act. The kind of the point here, and I think it's a really good recommendation to have an ad hoc, is to really drill down, sometimes in a less formal manner, but also on a specific issue. And once that issue is either completed or the purpose of the ad hoc is over, it's not a continuing committee. So I think, you know, we've heard a lot about concerns of rangeland owners and cattle folks and how this came about, the fee. And so I think it's probably important in responding to that, to kind of have this specialized ad hoc appointed for this purpose. And then, of course, once we either, you know, come to a resolution, come to a study, come to a new 218, however it is that we kind of get to the end of that process, that ad hoc is dissolved. So it's kind of the difference. I think Director Rohrer said, you know, asked what the difference was. And really, it's this kind of, we're paying special attention, we're drilling down, we're pulling people together. And it's really allows stakeholders to also get a lot more information and ask both board members that aren't in a quorum setting and potentially SHAC members as well for specific feedback. So, I mean, I think that's the hope here.
And Valerie, if you don't mind asking this question, did you say that an ad hoc committee, even if it has some SHAC members or these board members, would not be subject to the Brown Act?
If you make her a co-host, she can unmute herself.
Thanks. Sorry, it took me a while there. Yeah, that's right. So long as it's not a quorum of either body, it is not subject to the Brown Act. And again, I mean, you can have stakeholders come. It's not that it's not transparent. It's just an option for a subset of either the board or the SHAC or both to meet and really start talking really difficult, frankly, and complex subjects with stakeholders. It's very difficult to do in a board setting. So you don't necessarily have to limit the stakeholders, but you can limit the board and the SHAC to non-quorum members, and that it's not a Brown Act issue.
Great.
Thank you.
Any other comments, questions, directions, riddles, jokes? Nope, looks like we're good. Okay, great. Thank you. And you all have that what you need? Perfect. We will move to item 6.3, update on the VINA GSA board and stakeholder committee appointments.
All right. So as you know, there are a couple of our stakeholder director positions will expire, I think, this time next week. So one thing to note that the stakeholder directors are appointed by the Board of Supervisors. So the process does take a little longer than just accepting applications and bringing it back to the member agency board directors. So just to give you an overview, Butte County will conduct an open application process. And I said 14 days, but I got it confirmed that it's a 21-day application process. And the county will identify qualified candidates for both positions. So the county will review the applications to ensure compliance with stakeholder criteria and qualifications, which I'll get into in a minute. And then the agricultural groundwater users of Butte County are also involved in the process, and they provide a list of four nominees selected from the list of qualified candidates for the agricultural stakeholder director position. There's an ad hoc nomination committee that's made up of the member agencies directors, or the member agencies excluding Butte County. And so we'll have to form an ad hoc nomination committee that shall provide recommendations on stakeholder director selection to the Butte County Board of Supervisors through an open, transparent, and public process.
Quick observation. Mm-hmm. With our two seats not being on the board, your ad hoc committee now is quorum.
That's true.
Well, and Todd can't be on it because
it would be
two of the. There will only be three votes on the board at that stage. It will be two of the three votes. So we'll just not sure how to navigate that.
Yeah, I don't know how to navigate that. I don't think it has to be. Valerie, you tell me if I'm. It just says the ad hoc nomination committee is made up of member agencies. I don't think it says member agency directors. So it could be staff, right, excluding or other directors. So it could be a director and staff. It just can't be Butte County. Perfect. I guess. So
yeah, the precedent that happened last time anyway was that your counterpart, who is Ann Schwab, and then Raymond in his own counterpart, because he's been the continuing thread throughout our agency, held interviews, and the two, and then decided whether there was going to be a recommendation or not on each of the positions. So that was essentially how it was conducted last time. So for historical, not making any argument, just making a point. So.
Okay, so we'll look into that process a little more unless, Valerie, so could it be just, it could be staff, right? Or do we have it
It can be staff. And normally if you had a full 5-member board, your quorum would be 3, but you're right. If you go down to 3 members, then your quorum and you're obviously a majority of a different number is a different number. So, but it can be staff. Yep.
Okay.
And I think the only reason that it says to not have the county representatives, because the county representative is already going to be voting for the appointment itself. So again, a quorum may or may not be an issue with that. Again, I'm just throwing that again, just informationally and what happened last time. So anyway, so is that about the stakeholder process, stakeholder director process? I know it's a little confusing with the stakeholder and stakeholder.
Right. I know. So I did want to talk about the schedule a little bit. So we would be able to fly the application starting today or tomorrow. So essentially tomorrow. So we would announce that the vacancies are open and initiate the application process. And that's, again, a 21-day process. The county would review those qualifications again to see if the applicants meet the qualifications. And then we would provide the AGUBC the list of ag stakeholder director applications so that they could review and provide a list of 4 nominees. The ad hoc nomination committee would review the applications and the AGUBC list and make recommendations for consideration by the Board of Supervisors. And the ad hoc recommendations would be due to the county by around Friday of September 22nd so that we could pull together a staff report for inclusion on the Board of Supervisors October 10th agenda. So we have usually 2 weeks before the meeting is when any agenda items are due. So that gives us a day or two to pull together a packet. And let me see my last slide. Oh, so I did have, planned ahead. So just to kind of review the agricultural stakeholder director criteria is that they reside in the GSA boundaries. They own lease real property in active commercial agricultural production. The commercial agricultural production operation extracts groundwater from the agency jurisdiction for the irrigation and frost protection of at least 50 acres of agricultural crops in commercial operation. And the business entity that the agricultural stakeholder representative has commercial agricultural interests solely within the Sacramento Valley region. And the agricultural stakeholder or entity he or she represents may not be a party to any pending litigation against the agency or any of its members. And because we also have the domestic well user stakeholder position open, that person needs to reside in the boundaries of the GSA and extracts groundwater from a domestic well and cannot be party to any pending litigation against the GSA. So that's with the director's positions. I did want to also mention and go through, I don't know if you want me to stop there, but I did want to mention that there are some stakeholder advisory committee positions that will be open. I haven't done a detailed list of the timeline of that, but just so you know, there's about in the next month, there is three positions in September that will become vacant. And then we have some in the next few months, there's a few positions. So we will be announcing those positions and getting some applications from for the Stakeholder Advisory Committee. And those positions are appointed by this board. So what I anticipate is that once we have a full board, that then we would come back and nominate those positions.
I have a question. I know a lot of these dates that are staggered are because people left the board and then were replaced. Does the person who replaced a previous stakeholder committee member start a four-year clock again, or do they fill the rest of the term as if it were an appointment for a different type of board with a term?
That's a good question. I think if I recall somewhere in the charter, we eventually have staggered positions. And so I think they've naturally become staggered. So given that some expire in a year or two. And so I think we probably just, whenever they get appointed, that should be their start date. And then that way, those will be 4 years, and then we have some that are up in a couple years. Does that make sense? So they've naturally become staggered positions.
Do we need to take a formal action to do that, to kind of ingrain that, or is that fine? I just want to make sure that we, you know, it would seem like it's convenient that fate aligned it that way. but I don't know if that's something that we then need to codify.
At some point it did say that they became staggered positions, but we haven't solidified that in any formal way, or if we wanted to pick start and stop, and which makes it easier, a little easier for staff, because it's harder to track when someone, you know, resigns and then we have the new appointment. But I'll defer to Valerie on that, how we officially get to staggered positions that start and stop at a certain time.
I think usually a charter would say that you know, if you have a block appointed at one time, usually, you know, 2 seats or 4 years, 2 seats or 3 years, 2 seats or 1 year kind of thing. That's how you stagger it. If that's not included in the charter, we should probably check the charter just to make sure that's the case. And then usually once that staggering happens, everyone has a standard term. So usually once a staggering has been established, everyone has a 4-year term or 3-year term or whatever the term is, everyone gets the same term once the staggering occurs.
So Pat, perhaps we amend the charter to reflect that as we do these appointments? Would that be a good
idea? Yep, I think that's probably the right thing to do to make sure they remain staggered.
Okay. And so we'll then do that.
If anybody was ever to fill in, somebody left mm-hmm. a 2-year term, they're just filling in for the 2-year term, yeah. And that way everything stays staggered.
Yes.
Just know because we had this happen at council. So
yeah.
Hopefully it doesn't happen, but it does.
Right.
So okay. 2 quick thoughts. By the time we have a full board again, we have a couple people who will have expired on the stakeholder advisory committee. So I'd hate to then be initiating that process in the middle of October. So maybe we take action tonight to direct staff to set up a timeline to initiate applications.
Yeah, I was planning on it. Just I didn't have time today. Perfect. To give you a proposed schedule.
Okay. And then are there any board meetings scheduled between now and the 10th of October?
No.
Okay. I would, whether I'm in the seat moving forward or somebody else representing the ag communities in the seat, I would. It'd be great if the board meetings, if at all possible, would pause until we were back at full 5 people.
Right. So I'm going to go to the next slide. So this next slide kind of shows that where we'd have the ad hoc nomination committee. We would add the October 11th board meeting. I don't think it was on our original calendar, but it's proposed that you adjourn to that date tonight anyway. Part of that meeting would be to nominate a board chair and vice chair, do the SHAC appointments, and identify one to 2 board directors for a fee study, proposal, reviews, interviews, if that was what the board wanted to do with the fee study, and any other direction as applicable.
3rd quick observation that this just triggered, there won't be a chair or vice chair as of next week. So
right,
it's not an agendized item, so I don't know if we can vote on it right now, but who's legally representing the board starting a week from now? Because that's the chair's role.
Valerie.
Do we have alternates in those spots or no?
No. The vice chair is the alternate.
Yeah, the vice chair is the alternate.
And both the vice chair and chair are both termed out at the same time. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't know how we did that.
Well,
I mean, you could have an acting chair for that one meeting. And you can have anyone.
Yeah, we won't have
step up meeting. And say you can be an acting chair for the day.
Yeah, if there has to be a special meeting or something that gets called, then yeah, one of the 3 you'll decide. Perfect. That. Yeah. Okay.
Now, meeny, miny, mo.
Just going back to the stakeholder advisory committee, there were 8 positions that were, I'll use my word, baked in again into the, you know, that were for particular constituents, 2 at large that we have assigned. Is that something that our board could change? We've heard conversation tonight about having rangeland owners have more of a stake. Is that something that this group could decide to do before the recruitment process?
You could identify different beneficial or stakeholders. I'm wondering though, with our MOUs with Butte College and Chico State, I would have to double check if our MOUs said
that. MOUs were signed before we actually then picked representatives. Okay. I don't think it's in there.
Okay.
We actually don't have an MOU with Chico State either. Right. We decided to include Chico State because we'd included Butte College and we had a space.
Right.
So again, I have some ideas potentially if we decide at this meeting to discuss that for the application process. I guess I'll throw it out there because mm-hmm. I'm being looked at. Well, it is. I think we do have it on the agenda for in terms of discussing and giving direction for the stakeholder advisory committee. So I think that would fall within the confines of the agenda. Is that correct, Valerie?
Yep. Is your idea that to add members or to explore the concept of changing the makeup of the SHAC? Is that right?
Yes, exactly. Explore
that. Yeah, you can give direction for that.
Great, thank you. So my thought is, you know, if we create a, if we take the Butte College and Chico State positions, create one position for a water scientist or hydrologist, that would give some of the technical expertise that we're getting. I'm sorry, I turned my head in, so I don't know if everybody could hear. A water scientist or hydrologist position could get some of the expertise. We're getting that from Dr. Green right now. And so that's something that we could get. And then that frees one position right there for a non-irrigated user slash rangeland user. And then we can look at the other ones and decide, but that's a quick fix without displacing any of the other position seats for that. So that's a thought to throw out there. I don't know if anybody has other ideas or.
Would that cause a change in our charter to do that?
Can you say what you
were? I don't believe that mine would change because they're the two at large seats. Mm-hmm. So just redefine those two at large seats. We had kind of given them, for lack of a better word, to Butte College and Chico State. And so if we made one water scientist and one a rangeland non-irrigator seat, I don't believe that would change anything because that's not, again, removing the people who are already listed in the charter specifically, you know, Cal Water, ag user, business representative, environmental representative, domestic well. I think those are the ones that are quote unquote baked in.
Right. Yes, those are. It's listed there as to what the categories are. The positions that are up in September and then following in November are the ag users, domestic well user with Ann Dawson, environmental stakeholder in November with Jim Brobeck. Bruce Smith is the business representative in November. And then Chris Madden is Cal Water now. And then Evan Markey is, sorry.
Cal Water.
Chris Madden's Butte College.
So you're saying when Butte College's seat terms up,
yeah,
in the same bandwidth, since that was an at-large seat.
Right. Yeah, and I like the idea because
ideally it would be somebody representing those constituents. Yeah.
Right, and my idea again of having, you know, a hydrologist, water scientist, there are technical decisions that are bandied about, and having that expertise again baked into the group, I think could be very positive. So that's just my thought. Again, it's about the position, not necessarily the person. So again, we could get it doesn't necessarily have to be a hydrological scientist from the university if that's what we're calling for in that position. So anyway, just my. That was my thought process that obviously is open for refinement. So
I think Christina's looking at the, so this list here that is in front of you on the screen is from Appendix A of the JPA, but then looking at the charter. Okay. Yeah. So it's yes, you can change it.
Okay.
So is the board basically suggesting the staff position that pending vacancy as an at-large unassigned?
Or if we make up our mind of what it specifically is going to be, we could recruit for that and people would know that it's there. So again, it's up to what we decide. But
well,
again,
I don't know if this is appropriate, but I think we need to designate it as a non-irrigated position because we don't have a non-irrigated position on our board. And certainly, what is it, at least a quarter of the acreage from in the Vina GSA or the Vina subbasin is non-irrigated. So I think we need that voice.
Like a non-irrigated rangeland.
A permanent voice on our stakeholder advisory committee.
Now, the language specifically states the agency board may appoint other interests mm-hmm. representing beneficial users and uses of groundwater as per water code section.
Okay.
Well, again, that makes sense to me. Again, I was suggesting either or. And so for that spot, make sure that's the one. And then since Dr. Green is already here mm-hmm. with a term to 21, then when that comes up, that mm-hmm. would be the water scientist seat as opposed to quote unquote the Chico State seat, right? Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's anyway.
Okay.
I'm willing to make a motion for that, assuming that unless somebody has a better idea or a better suggestion.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
I'll second that motion.
Are we allowed to take action without it being agendized, or is it?
It is agendized. Okay. I asked the.
Perfect.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, that was what Valerie said because it's in the scope.
I knew
of
she
that.
Said we could discuss it. I didn't hear action.
So. Yeah. Great. So we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Okay. Seeing none, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Board Member Reynolds?
Aye.
Board Member Kimmelshue?
Aye.
Board Member Cooper?
Aye.
Vice Chair Royer?
Aye.
Chair Tuschinski?
Aye. So that passes unanimously. And is there any other direction that you might need or anything?
You will be going back and changing the charter in regards to, or bringing forth changes to the charter in regards to staggered terms for the
yes.
Stakeholder Advisory mm-hmm. Committee. So while you're looking at the charter, can you go back to the qualifications for board members? Okay, I would entertain or just ask that we use the same language in regards to our stakeholder advisory committee in regards to number 5, may not be party to any pending litigation against the agency or its members. And I think that should apply to the stakeholder advisory committee as well. And I would say something to the effect that it is someone that represents an organization that is on the stakeholder advisory committee, whether it be an employee, an officer, management of that organization. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is that a motion?
Well, I don't know if that would be a motion.
It's not a motion.
if there's a second, if everybody understands the motion.
Yeah.
Basically, I don't think there should be somebody on the SHAC that is inactive. Is in relation to someone who is actively in litigation against this organization, this agency.
Valerie, did you have a comment?
Yeah, sorry. I think that's good direction. And it sounds like that's direction to staff to bring that into a charter amendment. Okay. But if it's a charter amendment, we should have the staff amend it per direction and bring it back for a vote at a later time.
Okay.
Okay, perfect, good.
So that's Thanks. Just direction. There's no vote at this time. Okay, right. Thank you.
Yeah.
And there seems
thank
to be
you.
Concurrence. I just wanna make sure there seems to be concurrence from colleagues, yes, great, perfect. And Vice Chair Royer, who's my great right-hand man on the left, he pointed out that I, in all this conversation, I didn't ask about public comment on this item. So is there any public comment on this item? Nope. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, Tovi? Tovi was just, I think,
okay,
smiling at the belatedness. Anyway, good, well. Thank you, Vice Chair Royer. And we will now move on to item 6.4. Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm
going to say on the last one. I'm
okay.
Understand the direction given the staff about applying the legal requirement to our SHAC as well. I am not convinced. So I'd love to see the language on it. If I'm still on the board at that time, I do want to dig deeper into the discussion. Mm-hmm.
So. No, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's why we got good advice from our council to wait until we see the specifics on that. So great. Perfect. Yeah.
Chair Tuschinski,
yes,
also
ma'am.
We would like some guidance on an ad hoc nomination committee, whether it's a member of the board and then perhaps staff for the positions, the stakeholder director positions.
So for the ad hoc committee of the, you know, for the nominating of the stakeholder director
yes.
things.
Mm-hmm. So it could be, I think we've decided it can only be one director if a director is, and it can't be the county. So it would have to be Casey or Raymond and then perhaps staff.
Just to quickly to ask for Valerie, what happened, again, this isn't to try to relitigate what happened 4 years ago, but 4 years ago at least did set a precedent. Was that a precedent that was proper when we had Director Cooper and then at the time Chair Schwab? So I just want to make sure that if it's not really a problem, then that could be fine. But just so we know what the latitude is, if we don't have that option, then we know that we have to have a director or staff.
Yeah, so if you're meeting and if you were board members meeting at a time when there are only three sitting board members. Two of those board members would constitute a quorum and a majority, frankly. So you probably should not do that unless it's Brown Act and agendized. So my suggestion would be not to meet in twos during this very short time period, where we have a reduced board seat number. Does that make sense?
Yes, makes sense. Yeah. So it sounds like that's the, by default, that's the necessity that we have to do. Do we need to nominate those people at this meeting or?
Well, since a lot of them are rolling off in November, I don't.
Oh no, this is for us. This is for your seat and my seat.
I thought I heard you say Shaq.
Oh yeah, no, I may have misspoken. So I'm fine with that though. I think I should because I'm kind of involved, I should recuse myself from that. And it's up to Vice Chair Royer.
I would nominate Raymond since he's done it before. I think he'd do great again. Unless you really don't want to do it, then I will happily serve.
Okay.
Easily done.
Well, it sounds like that was.
And as far as the staff member goes, you guys can like toss a quarter Rochambeau, whatever. No, we know it can't be Cammie because yeah. She's in the county, right?
I'm gonna make Eric do it because then I'm gonna make Eric do it this time.
There you go. When you go to a meeting, you get nominated. Huh?
Okay, eliminating county involvement. I mean, whatever you is decided. So I would think Linda would be with Raymond, and then whatever they decide, then the county can package it up for the Board of Supervisors.
Sounds great.
Great. So you have that down officially for minutes? Okay, great. Anything else on that item? Speak now or hold your peace. Okay. Item 6.4, consideration of a plan to implement the Sustainable Groundwater Management Grant Program. Christina Buck.
Great. Good evening. Okay, let me pull up my slides here. So these were in your packet as well, but I want to just take us back for a minute as introduction to this item and remember that we were going after grant money in last fall. And so in the process of doing that, we started with the list of projects and management actions that are in the GSP. Can you hear me okay? Or do you want me to take? Okay. So we started with that list, and we really said many of these projects are concepts, and to be able to fund them, they need to be shaped up more with more specific tasks and budgets and schedules and things. So we went through a process and ran a few public meetings or public workshops to do that, hired a couple of different consultant teams to help us do that, and then went through this process of prioritizing those things. And you'll remember that we ended up with 10 components that were included in our grant application with the idea that the Department of Water Resources may award partial funding and they might just go down our list. And so we kind of moved things around to be in the order, to be in a prioritized order. So that's what this first summary table is. It's reflective of what's in the grant application, the 10 different components. The first few are really data gap related pieces. So these should look familiar to you, but the monitoring network enhancements. So this is for expanding and putting in new monitoring wells, community monitoring, domestic well survey, trying to fill that data gap of really understanding where active domestic wells are. And then a project that was more around GSP implementation compliance activities. So this had the long-term fee study money there, annual reports, response to DWR GSP determination, which happily we've set some money aside there in case we had to do some quick 6-month turnaround, but with an approved plan, we know that will not be necessary at this point. The 5-year update and stakeholder outreach. So that was kind of a combined piece. Then we had the interbasin coordination activities. And then the second half, kind of the next 5, were more projects kind of out of implementation projects out of the GSP. And so that included Extend Orchard Replacement Program, kind of building out that program and a pilot piece of that, the Lindo Channel Surface Water Recharge Implementation, and Ag Surface Water Supplies Feasibility Analysis, really looking for opportunities to utilize and bring surface water into the subbasin for irrigation and thereby reduce groundwater demand. An Agricultural Irrigation Efficiency Program, and that has $1 million, so it had a pilot piece to it as well, and then the groundwater recharge feasibility analysis and site evaluation. So this is what is in the grant application. And as you know, in May, DWR did release their list of draft funding awards. And so this is what we're working off of in terms of what we are kind of tentatively expecting and hoping to receive. So we do, I think we had heard maybe by the end of August or September, they would finalize the award. So hopefully it's soon. The idea is that we really want to be ready to just hit the ground running as soon as those awards are finaled and we can get, you know, the grant agreement in place. So the work ahead really is, I'm thinking about it in two phases, the next 4 to 6 months, wanting to confirm the projects. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight a little bit more. The components that are in the grant application, we kind of pulled apart and rearranged so that we could prioritize things. When we think about implementing a project, I've kind of put them back together in different ways, and you'll see that. And so that's kind of the proposed projects that I would say, this is how we're proposing as staff that we actually get this work done under specific consultant contracts. And so that's what I'm calling kind of proposed projects. And then we will need to establish a grant agreement with DWR once the awards are finaled kind of through them. And so that will be a grant agreement between the VINA GSA and the Department of Water Resources. And then establishing any sub-recipient agreements with Butte County. And you'll see I'm proposing that Butte County kind of takes the lead on a couple of these projects. And so to kind of outline that, that would be in a sub-recipient agreement, essentially passing grant funding from the GSA to Butte County. One of the things we had talked about kind of during project development, as an example, was the Linda Channel project, could be a City of Chico project. And talking to Linda, kind of happy to keep that as a VINA GSA project. But you can imagine that there are opportunities, you know, for the GSA to partner with different entities, Butte County being one of them. We know that the Tuscan Water District is trying to get itself together and formed and could be a partner in the future as well. So just thinking about how the GSA goes about implementing projects and partnering with member agencies and perhaps others. So, you know, once we kind of frame up these projects, we'll be needing to get them out the door for RFPs, requests for proposals, getting contractors on board and executed. So hopefully kind of, like I said, in the next 4 to 6 months, those things could happen. And then really phase two is over the next 2 years, project management and getting these projects done in coordination with the consultants, but also obviously management committee, SHAC, board, specific outreach and all the rest. So at this time, given kind of the capacity of the VINA GSA, the management committee has talked about it and recommends that Butte County manages the grant and provides project management kind of on behalf of the GSA for these projects. So they would be, there would be, again, there's these kind of proposed projects and we'll walk through these in detail. Some of them would be VINA GSA projects and some of them could come under the implementation of our department more specifically, but overall the grant management and project management could be funded by the grant, but through kind of employee work of our department on behalf of the GSA. So I'll talk about that a little bit more. So again, these are the four kind of proposed GSA projects. I'll go through them each one, but this is an overview. So again, the GSP update, what I've called the GSP update data gap and outreach project is really a combination of a few tasks from a few of the different components from the application, really focusing on data gaps, right? So it's got the monitoring network pieces in there, domestic well survey, as well as the 5-year update and the chunk of money that we set aside for revisiting the interconnected surface water sustainable management criteria. So this is really where a lot of this funding and effort is going to go directly to addressing many of the corrective actions, recommended actions that were in DWR's review and determination letter. So grateful for grant funding to be able to really tackle a lot of those things. We're also proposing that there's kind of a dedicated outreach program, that there would be a consultant contract. I've pulled stakeholder outreach money out of a number of these different projects and put them kind of consolidated into one outreach program. We're recommending that we really get a firm or a consultant on board that this is their expertise, right? Is putting packaging information in digestible pieces and really telling the story as we implement these projects over the next 2.5 years through an outreach program. So that's what this one's about. The third one is I've called demand reduction strategies in the VINA subbasin. So this combines two of those grant application components, the Extend Orchard Replacement Program and the agricultural irrigation efficiency pilot program. So this is a big one, $2.4 million, because a good chunk of it is that pilot program implementation. So it would be a contract that the GSA could establish with the consultant to frame up what those programs would be. And then much of this money would go out the door to program participants. And then the fourth GSA project would be the Lindo Channel Surface Water Recharge Implementation Project. So again, this is refining the scope and kind of thinking about how that system might be operated differently to increase recharge in that area. So those are the proposed kind of Vina GSA projects. The three Butte County projects, again, as a member agency, we would partner with the GSA and take the lead on implementing these pieces. So I'll just walk through those: interbasin coordination and modeling. So this one takes actually a task on the interbasin coordination side out of the Vina application and kind of the corresponding task out of the Wyandotte Creek application, in which the framework for interbasin coordination recommended, you know, now that GSPs have been adopted, that we kind of look around at our neighbors and see how we may affect each other. So we've put those two together so that we would do it kind of consistently for the Sac River corridor and then the Feather River corridor, and our department kind of, you know, serving as an interbasin coordination hub for a lot of that work, as well as the Butte Basin groundwater model update. Again, kind of half of that money comes out of the Vina pie and half of it comes out of Wyandotte Creek. So overall, the project's a $490,000 project, but the Vina grant share is about $240,000. And then the second project is the surface water supply and recharge feasibility study. So we're proposing that Butte County serves to take the lead on this as well. And this is really looking at opportunities to conduct recharge in the Vina subbasin, as well as do outreach and education around that. So, it also combines the recharge piece with the agricultural surface water supply and feasibility analysis. So really looking at both of those kind of from an in-lieu recharge perspective of bringing surface water supplies into the subbasin and recharge. So those might be kind of similar water supplies. So thinking about whether, you know, making it a direct irrigation water supply or making it a recharge project, we think should be kind of considered under one umbrella. So that's why those are put together. Okay, so the proposed subrecipient agreement that could be established between the GSA and Butte County would include these things: the project management and grant administration funding, some technical assistance funding to support GSP updates. That's really to help compensate and free up some of Kelly and my time to really be able to engage on the monitoring network refinements and some of those GSP amendment and updates that need to be done. And then the two projects that we just talked about, interbasin coordination and modeling and the surface water supply and recharge study, and then the annual reporting, which we currently have a contract with Ludorf and Scalmanini Consulting Engineers on behalf of Vina and the other two subbasins to do that annual reporting. So the grant would just kind of pay for that over the next couple of years. So the total subrecipient agreement would be about $1.425 million. So that's a lot, but that's the overview of kind of how these projects have been kind of re-put together into what we think are cohesive projects that we could hire consultants. $11 million, including the grant funding for Wyandotte Creek, is a lot of money to spend in 2.5 years. So part of the thought here is to package things in a way that we can really hire consultants that specialize and can do the best work for each kind of piece. Partly also spread out the money so that we can hire consultants that have the time and the bandwidth to do these things well, and then just have a lot of fun doing a lot of good work, right, over the next couple of years. So what I'm hoping to hear from you is just some input and direction. Do these projects seem right? Do you want any adjustments? So confirming kind of how they've been put together, and then provide direction to staff to go ahead and start prepping these RFPs for these projects and drafting the subrecipient agreement. I think we should probably wait till at least DWR finals kind of issues a final award list. But as soon as they do that, we could start doing some of this prep work so that as soon as we have an executed grant agreement with DWR, we could also essentially start paying consultants to do work and have some of those contracts in place as well.
Thank you. Very excellent presentation and a good way of thinking about it. So I appreciate that personally. Colleagues, any questions immediately or comments immediately? Okay, I'm hearing none. Do we have any public comments? Hearing none, and none were emailed in, I assume? Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, Toby's out there chatting. So, oh, well, we'll continue if he comes back in and waves at us frantically. You know, we can reopen. Anyway, I just to echo what I said before, I think this was a good way of kind of package things conceptually. I mean, early on, because of the, you had explained to us when we were doing the grant application that things had to be separated for the purposes of the grant when you were going project by project, and they may remove a project, but that there were things that overlap. So you've gone back to what we were thinking about. So anyway, I didn't see anything that from how you packaged it that I would presume to know differently. So for me, I'm fine, but I'm curious if my colleagues, gonna seem like good efficiencies and things, so.
No, I would just say, you know, thank you so much for doing the hard work on this and going from, you know, 10 different bullet points to having, you know, four or five actionable items makes it much easier to understand, I'm sure, for everybody, because I know we painstakingly went over these 10 items for probably a 4 or 5 hour meeting last time. So thank you for all your work on that. And I would move to approve and move forward if that's what's needed.
Great. Would a formal motion be helpful on this, or did you just need a direction?
I think formal motion is
okay. Great. So we have a motion from Director Reynolds to.
I'll second that.
And a second from Director Kimmelshue. See no further discussion. So Linda.
Board Member Reynolds.
Aye.
Board Member Kimmelshue.
Aye.
Board Member Cooper.
Aye.
Vice Chair Royer.
Aye.
Chair Chacinski.
Aye. Passes unanimously and with gratitude. Thank you. Thank you. Communications and reports. Did you want to speak to any of these items, Cami, or were they strictly informational by email?
Pretty much informational, although I think we should at least note on item 7.1 that we did receive the approved determination from the Department of Water Resources for our GSP, as well as Wyandotte's and the Butte Sub-Basin. So yes. So we'll be bringing information back about that. There are recommended corrective actions in the letter. It's a 49-page letter, I think. And so what we will be doing is looking at those recommended corrective actions, making sure that the projects and things that we're working on address those items, and those would be incorporated into either amendments or the GSP update process later on. So most, I think some of the grant money, assuming that all of we get what they said that they're going to give us, we'll be able to address all of the things that have been identified in the letter. So we're very excited and happy.
I just want to give a quick shout out to our staff on that, because that is a major, major feat. There's some people I have heard that are on round 2 and 3 and still do not have theirs approved. And we got ours done on round number 1. So thank you to the board and staff for doing such an amazing job on that.
Agreed.
Absolutely. Are there any other questions or comments about any of the items of communication?
Yeah. Can we look at the well permit data for a second?
Oh.
This comes from which department?
This comes from Environmental Health.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah, and he actually sent an email with it that provided a couple highlights. Do you want me to just run down a couple bullet points? Or do you want to just jump to questions?
Just specific question, if it's sure. In the bullet points, and that takes care of it. Small diameter well permit data that covers 2015 to 2023, 1,066 permits issued, 1,371 wells completed. Mm-hmm. 1,100 of which were within the past year and a half. Is there a data error in this, or?
I won't say a data error. I think what that is the Environmental Health was doing some updates and taking care of some backlog, so it made it spike in the end, which is unfortunate, because then it looks like exactly that, but they were doing some, I think, corrections and making sure all of the information was up to date, and it landed in where it looks like
So the backlog must have gone back prior to even 2016.
Yeah, it went back quite a ways. So in one of the graphs, it did, all of a sudden you saw the bar just extend all the way up to the top of the graph. And so that one, right? I
think. All right, and is that what happened in August of 2022 with the large diameter wells, or?
Probably
jumped to 62?
Yes. Yes. So
there weren't 62.
I think if staff in environmental health had enough time, they would probably go back and assign it to certain months and did it that way through the last couple of years, but that's not how it was done. So yes, it makes the data wonky.
Okay. That explains it. It just seemed somebody pointed out the numbers to me. That's odd. One other quick question on the dry well data. Known depths of dry wells, Oroville 600 feet. I get Forest Ranch at 520, they're up on a ridge. And you got one in Chico at 172 feet. I don't have standing water levels anywhere close to that low, do we? So are they actually dry wells, or are they wells where they broke down?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. Although, depending on where you are in Chico, sometimes it's surprisingly deep, even on the east side.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm not sure.
That's just, we see these dry well numbers, and there are times where I feel like we don't have a quality check as to whether the well's actually gone dry, or there's an engineering problem with it. And then we're told that all these wells are going dry when it could just be a very poorly engineered well that failed. Or old well that failed. And I feel that like that all gets lumped into,
Right, to having more data for the information that it is presented. Yeah. And we can ask environmental health if they have that type of information, if they track it that way. And if Kelly were here, I know she could probably speak to some of the things that we're seeing, especially with wells going dry and then water coming back and then wells failing even because of collapse within the well. But we don't have the specific information.
Yeah, whether we put an asterisk on this in the future or if they've got some information for us, I think it'd be helpful because a lot of folks in the public latch onto these numbers and then say, all these wells are going dry. And there are a lot of really old wells in the community.
Right.
So.
And we could also maybe at some future meeting date have environmental health come give a more detailed presentation, and I'm sure that they would be willing to do that perhaps annually.
Yeah, that'd be good. And again, it'll ensure that we have absolute confidence in the data that we have going forward, because that's such a key factor for the decision making, as Vice Chair Royer talked about, because people have hitched on to particular numbers or particular depths. It would just be good that we feel 100%. Again, I know that they've been keeping new data and that's great and they were catching up. But again, if we just make sure that we're covered for that moving forward.
And on a personal note, thank you guys. The past 4 years, you've done an incredible job getting both full funding on the grant, knock on wood that it comes through, and the GSP approved. Is couldn't ask any more of you. So thank you.
Well, I'll only do half credit that you give, because Kelly and Christina and the rest have been here for the last 4 years. I've only been here for two.
Linda does quite a bit too. We want Linda to stay around for another 4 years if we're able to come back for another 4 years.
She's not allowed to retire until we reach sustainability.
And I just wanted to thank all my colleagues and staff as well, and our stakeholder advisory committee, the chair of whom happens to be sitting in the crowd. We very much appreciate all of the public input in this process and all the staff input. And again, all the great discussions we've been able to have here too. Quote, Director Kimmelshue, robust.
Robust, absolutely.
And with that, we will adjourn. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sorry. I need to formally say, the vice mayor over here, who is our director, pointed out that I didn't say that we are formally adjourning till the Vina GSA board meeting on October 11th at 5:30 at Chico City Council Chambers.
I'm only saying that because it's an odd time. It's not our normal.
Oh, 5:30 p.m.?
No. The day.
Okay, earlier, yes, so right.
Just
right.
So people know.
Back to our meeting on the second Wednesdays of the month, but for the last 4 months, it has shifted.
Third or fourth.
Okay. Great.
Thank you.
All right. With that, adjourn.